This show is supported by generous listeners like you through our Patreon. This episode is underwritten by the Tamsin G Association and Stephanie Powers. Welcome to our newest patrons, Jasmine Z, Annabelle Lee, and Ms. Noid or MS Noid. Please clarify. To learn more about ways to support Oh My Dollar and get cool perks like fancy special icons on our forums, you can visit ohmydollar.com/support.
Welcome to Oh My Dollar, a personal finance show with a dash of glitter. Dealing with money can be scary and stressful. Here, we give practical, friendly advice about money that helps you tackle the financial overwhelm. I'm your host, Lillian Kerbake.
I'm your other host, Will.
Quick reminder that Oh My Dollar's cat-filled personal finance book is going into the second printing, and we need your help to make that possible. We're launching on Kickstarter, and we went live.
Woohoo!
You can back the project and see our budget-friendly planner and year-at-a-glance wall calendar and see the video at ohmydollar.com/cats.
The wall calendar is very cool looking.
I'm excited about it. It's actually just like a thing I wanted, so I made it. I think the best way to describe it. I just was like upset I couldn't find it in English, so I made it.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of perfect.
Yeah. Perfect transition, perfect Will. I've been doing a lot of thinking about perfectionism, and this is probably because I have like 10 different projects right now that are on hold until I can personally get a handle on my perfectionism around them. So, you know, of course, the best way to do this is to procrastinate by trying to work on my perfectionism instead of working on the projects, obviously.
So here we are.
Yeah. So here we are. But I actually think like as I've been doing like some work on this, I've been realizing for a lot of people how the statements that I hear them say about money, because I casually, like, obviously, I talk to Oh My Dollar listeners all the time on the forums and we get emails, but also just like I'm on an airplane and I tell people I teach personal finance and I end up getting these kind of statements out of people, right? At bars or whatever.
Yeah, the reactions to that must be interesting.
Yeah. And for a lot of people, I see kind of these statements that are linked to perfectionism and all or nothing thinking really turn up in the way that they approach money. Mm-hmm. And I guess I think it's useful to talk about it. Like, I am not a therapist, but we talk about all the time about how money is truly more emotional than it is about the numbers. And I think it's really important to kind of explore when you might be getting held back by kind of all or nothing thinking or shoulds, or you're being like overly critical of yourself around your money. Because I think it's an area where it's very easy to feel like there's some sort of thing as a perfect ideal, but there is not. It's just a progress and process. It's not a perfect end goal.
Okay. So like what's an example of that?
Well, so one hallmark of perfectionism getting in the way is an all or nothing attitude towards something. So all or nothing thinking, it usually comes with some sort of should statement. And then like it's usually accompanied by strong feelings of self-blame.
Right,
Hearing anything that we hear a lot with personal finance in that?
So something you should do or you feel like you should do and feeling bad when you don't do this thing that you think you should do or society tells you you should do.
Yeah. So and you convince yourself that things should be different and like more perfect, quote unquote. And then you blame yourself for the situation and then you often give up before you've even gotten started.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So like here are some examples of things I've heard that to me represent all or nothing thinking in money. So like I overspent on Postmates last week, so my budget is shot, so I might as well throw it away entirely.
Right.
It's kind of the I ate one cookie, so I might as well eat the whole package sort of thinking.
Yep. Already. Oh, yeah. Over budgeted. So just give up. Yeah.
A lot of this kind of manifests in wanting to make the perfect decision. Right. So why bother saving an emergency fund? Because you don't get any good interest on a savings account right now. So it's not worth it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So you've already thought so many steps ahead in the process that you're disappointed that the money that you save for an emergency fund isn't getting you a good return. So you shouldn't do it at all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. It's not perfect. So you don't want it.
You don't want it at all. All or nothing thinking, it usually like when it comes to perfectionism is focused on yourself, but sometimes you'll look at these, you'll overgeneralize about like like societal thing. So the stock market went down yesterday, and that means it's always going to go down, and so you shouldn't invest at all.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
yeah.
you'll lose all of your money.
Everything's always bad.
Because yeah. you heard that Apple stock went down yesterday or whatever. Or I have so many student loans, I will never be able to stop living paycheck to paycheck, so it's not even worth trying.
Right, yeah, yeah. Seeing an obstacle is insurmountable.
Insurmountable because you can't do it in the perfect way. And I think it's worse in sort of the Instagram and Pinterest perfect lifestyle. And if you're someone who, you know, maybe listens to a personal finance show, maybe you follow like personal finance people on the internet. And I have to follow personal finance people on the internet. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I have things pretty dialed in. Like I feel pretty confident about my money enough that I have a weekly show.
Yeah, you give suggestions on how to do it. Yeah.
Yeah. But I often find myself in this kind of all or nothing thinking where I'll be like, oh my gosh, that person was able to save this percentage of their income, or that person was able to buy a house in cash. And like, I should just stop trying because like, right. I'm not going to be able
I
to
can't
do that.
Approach this ideal.
Yeah. Or, you know, I hear this a lot around student debt. So like, I should be able to pay off my student loans in 5 years, but I also want to spend money on XYZ things, so I can't, so I might as well not try at all, right? You know, like getting caught up in these perfect scenarios in calculators. Or you see other people who manage to do it, like who manage to pay off their student loans at a really accelerated timeline, and you just know that it's not possible on your income level or with your healthcare expenses, or just because you also want to spend money on certain other things and you mm-hmm. can't accelerate your timeline that way. And so you just give up. If you're not putting all of your money towards that financial goal, then you shouldn't put any, and then it's just over.
Right. Yeah, okay. And that's a good example of that perfectionism you're talking about. If you can't do it perfectly, kind of worrying about doing it at all.
Yeah, exactly. And this manifests like perfectionism. I think we've had episodes on financial procrastination before, and perfectionism, I mean, the reason that I'm working on it right now is I procrastinate because I am a perfectionist, and I tend to do it on creative projects. Mm-hmm. I am attuned to the fact that like routine tasks that a lot of other people procrastinate on, like accounting or signing up for healthcare or whatever, is something to me that doesn't stress me out in the same way that putting a creative work out in the world does. And I'm much mm-hmm. more of a perfectionist about that kind of thing. But I see a lot of people that like they carry around such stress and so many shoulds around their money, and a lot of like anger at their past self. You see that uh-huh. a lot with debt, right? Like it's your past self that got you
yep.
into it.
Shouldn't have done that.
Shouldn't yeah. have done that. Therefore, you don't want to handle it right now. Or, oh, you should have everything on auto payment. And because you don't, you're a failure. Right.
Yeah.
Like this sort of like overgeneralizing, and then you go to the worst possible scenario. And just because you failed at a task, then you are a failure, which is just not true.
Yeah, yeah. Like, and that's important to keep in mind.
I see this, it manifests a lot in procrastination. And there's like, I don't want you to think that maybe you aren't a perfectionist at all, and that's awesome. But there's a bunch of different ways in which these like thought patterns can occur where they're sneakily perfectionism, and maybe you don't think. So like overgeneralizing is a big one. Like, you know, a common example is like, I was late once, so I'm always late and I'm a failure and I'm going to get fired. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know,
and sort like, of those self-fulfilling prophecies can be destructive.
Right, right. So catastrophizing is one of the big ones. Also the mental filter where you kind of, you assume what other people think about you based on something. So a mental filter is like someone compliments you on the fact that you're, you know, it like seems like you've got your money more handled now or something like that. And all you hear is you were terrible with money before, right? It's that filtering where you mm-hmm. are only hearing the negative sort of things. Anytime you're using should statements, right?
That's true. I'd never thought of that with the word should.
Shoulding all over the place, man.
Chris.
I mean, that's one of the big things. So like, I have to be in complete control of my budget. Otherwise, I'm just out of control, mm-hmm. right? Or making generalizations about yourself as a person based on one behavior.
Right. Or maybe not just focusing on the positive aspects. Like what you're saying with 100 is maybe people are missing the 75% of the time they're doing something well.
Yeah, totally. And I think that a lot of people, will use one misstep with our money as a way of making themselves feel like it's not worth doing at all. And mm-hmm. and this could be targeted at yourself. I think when it's perfectionism, it tends to be targeted at yourself. But this also can be true if you just, you know, you hear our healthcare episodes or you're following the news and you get really frustrated at the system in general. And so you feel like there's no way to win as like a working person in America right now. And therefore uh-huh. you just completely give up.
Yeah.
Right. Like, oh, the system is rigged against me, so I shouldn't even try.
The hopelessness.
Yeah, totally. A big one. So we talk about purchases a lot on this and like trying to optimize purchases. But this is a big one where kind of decision analysis and like over analysis of decisions can really manifest in ways that can like hurt you. So like, I can't buy this item because I have to find the perfect version of this item, even if it means spending way more time researching the purchase than the item brings me value. Or like, I have to get the best possible deal on oranges, so I go to the farthest grocery store where I know they're 10 cents less a pound, even when you actually do the math, you realize
spend more on gas money to get there or
exactly.
something. Yeah.
Or like, I have so many student loans, I'll never be able to stop living paycheck to paycheck. So like, it's not even worth trying to pay them off.
That one always sounds tough because it's often student loans can be such uncomprehendable numbers.
Right. They're so large that like student loans and mortgages, those are the kind of things where the numbers are so large for a lot of people. I hope that you're not in that camp, but for a lot of people, the numbers are so large and it can be really frustrating if you're on something like income-based repayment and you're only paying interest. So you are busting your butt trying to pay back your student loans mm-hmm. every month and only seeing the total go up. And that can be really challenging and can get you trapped in that cycle where you just feel like, oh, this is never going to work, so I shouldn't work on it at all, right?
Yeah.
And like real estate, this is one of the big ones. Like a lot of millennials are now living in cities where they just simply cannot afford to buy a home because housing prices are so high.
Correct.
And so like I know a lot of people who like believe that renting is throwing away your money and I can't afford to save for my dream home because my city is too expensive. So I shouldn't save for anything at all.
Yeah.
Right. You know, like I can't make the best possible investment, so I shouldn't do it in any way.
Right, when good enough is often good enough.
Yeah, I mean, incremental so here's the big thing that I so all of these statements, maybe you're feeling bad now because you're like, oh crap, this is me. Or maybe you're like, oh no, I'm great at this. I'm great at incremental progress. But I think it's important to recognize that the problem with all or nothing thinking is going from 100% to 0% and then back to 100% and again back to 0% and like again and again and kind of that loop. And recognizing, I think it's really helpful to recognize that money is a process. It's never a trophy mm-hmm. that you won and you put it on a shelf and you're done. Money is
some
always going to be a
McDuck
process.
Action.
Yeah, there is no such thing as perfect with money. And we talk about how like my budget is not your budget and like neither of us would feel happy about that. But it's also important to recognize that like there is no perfect ideal of even necessarily your budget. There's what makes you happy in the moment with your money. And sometimes that is slow incremental progress towards a goal, right?
Yeah.
Those big wins can be really sexy, but almost all of those big wins came from people making slow incremental progress and not being caught up in the perfect ideal of something. And you can do things incrementally with money. It's okay to not be perfect. It's okay to have an off budget week or month or even year. It's okay to backslide on your debt payoff or your savings goal because you had a breakup or you got sick, or just stop focusing on it for a little bit. Yeah. You don't even need a good reason, right? It's more
things happen.
Yeah, it's more important to focus on like the fact that you can sit and reassess and come up with a new plan. And just because you did that, don't catastrophize like, oh, because I backslid, I'm now never going to get out of the paycheck to paycheck lifestyle. I'm never going to be able to save for retirement. I'm going to end up eating cat food in retirement. Like,
yeah.
You know, like it's important to recognize that you can do things incrementally with money. And like, yes, like I think optimization has become so mainstream and so sexy thanks to like the Tim Ferrisses of the world and the Mr. Money Mustaches mm-hmm. of the world, that like people get really caught up in the fact that, like, if their budget isn't the most efficient form of XYZ, then they're failing.
Right, but, or that it's wrong, I guess.
Yeah, and that makes them wrong. But, like, yes, sure, maybe you could work out outside and buy free weights for your house and ditch the gym membership and save yourself a bunch of money and pay off your student loans XYZ number of years faster. But if you're using the gym membership and you don't want to run in the rain, that's fine. Like, yeah. Like, you're not a bad person just because you have made a different choice with your money. And just because you can't pay off your student loans tomorrow doesn't mean you can't make a payoff plan for them. I know a lot of people who convince themselves there's a better, future, perfect version of themselves who will have more money to pay off their student loans and they should just do it on a lump sum.
Okay, that's ambitious. Kind
of the lottery. I mean, like, the lottery version, right? You know, or the oh, I someday I'm going to be making big bucks doing this, so I will just put that off. But the best student loan payoff is the one that you can just do now.
Yeah, incremental or start. Yeah. Start with whatever you can.
Yeah. It's also, this is a big one. It's okay if you don't track your money to the cent. It's okay to make an imperfect organization system for your money. You know, I find a lot of people that have success with the automatic account method where it just goes into different accounts. Mm-hmm. And, like, they know themselves well enough to know that they're never going to get out of that cycle of just checking their bank account balance to see if they have enough money to spend. And they know they're going to spend down to zero. So they have one account that's their discretionary spending, and that's their account.
Yeah, I like that way.
Right? Yeah. You know, rather than being like, oh, I have to track it, and then sort of, like, you know, yo-yo dieting with budgeting where they're like, for 2 months they follow this perfect system and then they fail at it and then they go completely off the rails and end up overdrafting all of their accounts because they don't want to look at it at all.
Yeah.
Let's take a quick break and we'll talk more about ways that you can find ways to overcome perfection in your budget.
Yes. Be right back. We're back.
I'm back. And we are talking about the concept of progress beating perfection. So if there's something that you are procrastinating on because you feel like you have to figure out the best version of it, maybe it's worth finding the good enough solution. So if you're putting off logging into healthcare.gov to find a plan or, like, filling out those forms that have been on your desk for a month at work trying to pick a health insurance plan, maybe you don't need to have the perfect health insurance plan with the optimal deductible that you figured out and the best selection of doctors. Maybe you just have to pick a health insurance plan, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. You know?
I remember when I moved to Portland, I had a really crappy house way off in the middle of nowhere, and we always referred to it as our wooden sword, because you've got your... You know, when you start a video game, you've got, like, your wooden sword, which, you know, you, of course, upgrade as soon as possible. But I feel like that was a constructive attitude to take towards just something I needed.
Yeah, right. Like, it is a thing. You have to figure it out. And it's okay if it's not the best possible solution in that possible moment, right? Mm-hmm. You know?
Got to start somewhere.
Yeah. And I see this so often with starting to save. So I know a lot of people that are like, oh, I have to find the perfect high yield savings account before I can save my emergency fund. And I'm like, no, you don't. You really don't. Like, the difference between the 1.85% interest and the 1.95% interest means nothing if you have nothing in savings.
Yeah.
Right? And
1.5% of nothing is still nothing.
Yeah. Exactly. And, like, it's just like, you just have to start saving and doing those automatic. And, like, maybe it's a pain in the butt and you don't want to set up the new account, but you already have one at your credit union or whatever because you had to open a savings account. Like, and it doesn't get you any interest. Okay, fine. Right? Mm-hmm. Like, just getting started with it is more important than finding the best possible option. And then maybe later, when you have more energy and you're feeling excited about the fact that you have started saving, then you can work on optimizing it, right? And like, I think that a lot of the kind of early retirement movement can make people feel a lot of shame around saving. So like, they haven't hit the perfect 50% savings rate for their income, so they feel like they shouldn't even bother with it at all. Like, oh, it's great if you can save any amount of your income and find a way to start saving at all. You don't have to save 50% of your income. Getting started is more important than having the perfect one.
Yeah, there's that quote, the best time to plant a tree is last year and the second best time is today.
Yeah, perfect. I also think the 7 days a week fallacy is a big one. So there's this book on time management that I actually really like, even though it's actually focused on working mothers. It's called I Know How She Does It by Lauren Vanderkam.
Well, that might mean working mothers are probably great at time management.
Yeah, exactly. And it's particularly, like, I love it because she did a massive study of high achieving women where she had them log their time in 15-minute increments.
Because they didn't have enough to do.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, I log my time. It doesn't take that much time. But it's really cool because it shows that I think one of the cool parts, she interviewed a lot of women that have like legal careers and children under 10 and also have a side gig where they write mystery novels, like publish mystery novels, like just people where you look and you go like, how could someone possibly achieve all of
that? Have that time, yeah.
And one of the big things she talks about is the 7 days a week fallacy. And I know a lot of people who kind of fall into this trap, which is if they can't do it 7 days a week, they shouldn't do it at all. So, well, I have to eat out lunch Friday and Wednesdays because of coworker meetings or because I have to pick up my, you know, kid after school or something like that. So I should never bother to pack lunch. But if you pack lunch the other 5 days a week, you're still saving a lot of money, right? Like, just because you can't do it 7 days a week, or I can't do that hobby, I can't go to the gym every single day, so I shouldn't do it at all.
Why bother
because it doesn't work for me on XYZ day a week, or I can't bike to work every day of the week, so it's not worth doing. But like, hey, if you bike to work one day a week, that's still better than zero if that's your goal.
Yeah, that's a drastic improvement from zero.
Yeah. Or like, I see this a lot, like if you want to start getting better cooking at home, you don't need to make Pinterest perfect meals every night of the week or follow like the perfect YouTube video of batch cooking. Just try it out. Like find the thing that works for you.
Start somewhere.
Giving yourself permission to not have it dialed in. It's okay to have a less perfect solution to your money. So, for example, a lot of people ask how I spend so little on groceries. And one of the surprising things for people is I actually know I could spend a lot less on groceries because I buy a lot of my groceries at Whole Foods, otherwise known as Whole Paycheck. Mm-hmm. I generally only try to buy certain things at Whole Foods that I know have, you know, a competitive-esque price, but I objectively know that Whole Foods is more expensive than many other options. But it's also less expensive than eating out, right?
Yeah.
So it's a 3-minute walk from my house. You know what? I cook way more food at home because I grocery shop at the Whole Foods that is a 3-minute walk from my house.
Right, a further walk, and I'm sure you'd start considering other options.
Right, there's a lot of restaurants between me and the other stores. I could support like more local businesses, and I would like to. I could shop at the farmer's market and get the fresh veggies that look really great on Instagram. I could buy my tofu from the special cheap tofu store out on 82nd. They have very good tofu. But you know what? I buy stuff from Whole Foods, and I probably spend $5 to $15 more a month on groceries than I know I could if I went to other stores. But I can round trip shop door to door on foot in under 20 minutes each week. So
yeah.
I do.
Yeah.
And like, I'm okay with that. And
yeah, go with what's best or what's working.
Yeah, it doesn't.
And I guess you can always dial something in more if you start with something you feel is imperfect. It means there's always room for incremental improvements.
Right. Like, you can start making beans at home and not buy the cheapest dried beans, right?
Yeah,
like,
or start with canned beans.
Yeah. And that was my tacos are a great example. Despite the fact that, like, overall food prices have gone up, my taco costs have gone down because I've gotten more efficient slowly at my breakfast tacos, which, if you've listened to the show regularly, you know, I eat 3 tacos for breakfast every morning. And I started with canned beans, And then I moved to making beans on the stove. And then I moved to a slow cooker. And then I moved to a pressure cooker.
Yeah.
And like all of that lowered my prices and made it more efficient. But like that was over the course of like 7 years.
Yeah. I like your analogy of dialing something in, because that makes me think of dialing in espresso shots at a cafe first thing in the morning. Your first one's going to be like all off. It's going to be way too fast or way too slow. And it's going to suck. Then your second one, you'll probably err on the other side too hard. Yeah, it just kind of takes those incremental mistakes and getting it until it's, you know, perfect.
Yeah. So here is a big should that I hear. I should start investing, but I need to do the research. Here's the thing. It is okay to use a target index fund. We've talked about this before. Mm-hmm. Target retirement funds essentially automatically allocate based on your age, sort of the percentage of stocks and bonds.
And over a large number of stocks and bonds, too, to really average things out, right?
Yeah. It's and they have different expense ratios, which is the cost to you overall. And we've talked before about how, like, lower expense ratios are great, but sometimes you just don't have a lot of options in your, like, access to a 401k at work. You might have, like, one with very few options. A lot of people are like, oh, I'm going to lose money on the expense ratios. So until I've done the research and found the perfect allocations, I can't start getting invested for retirement. Here's the thing. It's okay to use a target retirement fund instead of allocating out your investments for yourself. Yes, maybe you'll lose some money over the long term to expense ratios, but you did it.
Yeah. And it's not like you're losing money overall. You're still you're losing money over what you could have done, and that seems like not worth focusing on.
Yeah, and I also think that a lot of people get caught up in the shoulds with their past selves.
Yeah, the past tense hypotheticals are bad news.
Yeah, I shouldn't have bought this house. You know, like I heard that a lot during the housing crash. I knew a lot of people with underwater houses who were so angry at their past selves that they weren't really dealing with what they needed to do then. Because they were so angry at their past selves for, like, buying a house at the height of the housing market.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, those are some of the things. I think one of the exercises I find really helpful, I tend to be on the catastrophic side, where I catastrophize, like, basic decisions, where I'll be like, oh, because I didn't do this, then I'm going to end up on the street as a bag lady.
Probably.
Right? You know, my inner bag lady is strong, as I like to say, which is rarely true. Like, I have a support network. I have a lot of resources I've been saving for a long time. I'm going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
But I decide because I, like, didn't respond to that email on time and I lost that brand deal, then I'm going to be eating cat food in retirement.
And
I like to use the then what exercise, which is, when I make a statement that falls into that should category or that I'm blaming myself, I just keep asking myself, then what? Then what? And eventually I reach the absurdity of the statement where I realize that, like, it's unreasonable. Once I ask myself, then what, a bunch of times, I'm like, oh yeah, I probably won't end up eating cat food in retirement.
Yeah.
Because it helps reduce it to the absurdity of the statement. The other thing I like to do is if you are a self-critical perfectionist, you're probably harder on yourself than you would be on a friend in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
And so I like to imagine myself as a friend or a listener that I'm giving advice to.
Oh, I see.
So, you know, when I am procrastinating on something, and I'm like, oh, I don't want to do this because it won't be the best version of it. And because I don't know how to do this thing in Final Cut and I can't edit this video this way, I shouldn't do it at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I would be like, but I would probably tell a friend, well, that's okay. You're learning. Like, you just make the thing.
Right. Yeah.
You know? Or like, can you fix that by watching a tutorial on how to do that thing? Like, is it, should you just not do that?
Yeah, because making it less personal seems like a good tactic.
That is really helpful. Or like, you know, the friend that's like, oh, I don't want to log in to check my bank account because I'm afraid of what it's going to say.
Well, yeah, you would tell your friend that you should do that just so you know what it says.
Yeah, exactly. Like, is it gonna change? That's where the then what is helpful. Like, but if you know that it's negative, then what? And you're like, oh, well, then I probably have to call the bank. And I'm like, okay, then what? And you're like, well, then I have to talk to the bank. And you're like, then what? And they're like, and then they're going to murder me at my house. And you're like, maybe
no.
That's catastrophizing. Like, other people have overdrafted their accounts before.
So this would be a good area to ask for listener input, I think. I'd be interested in hearing what other examples people can come up with of catastrophizing things or times they've gone for less than 100% perfect solutions that work for them.
Yeah, I would love to hear about your good enough solutions. Things mm-hmm. that you've just decided... this is good enough for now or maybe forever. And I'd also like to hear about, you know, maybe some all or nothing thinking that is impacting your procrastination or your financial worries.
Yes.
Maybe we can work through it. It's just a group money therapy session here on Oh My Dollar. But we'd love to hear from you. So if you have any of those, you can always leave them on the Oh My Dollar forums, or you can email us at questions@ohmydollar.com, or you can just tweet me at Anomalily or at Oh My Dollar.
Yep, that wraps the show for today. Our producer is Will Romy. Our intro music is by Aaron Parecki, and your host and personal finance educator is Lillian Kerbake. Thank you for listening, and until next time, remember to manage your money so it doesn't manage you.
And just remember, we have a Kickstarter going.
Yeah.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.